fresh spring rain brings much needed water to your garden, and in the aftermath, you find a few mushrooms sprouting up, and you wonder, are they supposed to be there? Am I supposed to pick them like weeds? What do I do with this fungi I've found, and what does it mean for my garden? If you've got questions about the mushrooms you've found, or you have a favorite fungi you'd like to share, you can join our conversation at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Larry Mueller today. And our next guest is Lindsay Bender. She's a mycologist at the Peshtigo-based mushroom cultivation company called Field and Forest Products. And Lindsay, welcome to the Larry Mueller Show.
Hi, glad to be here today, Lee.
I want to know from you before we get started how you became a mycologist and what made mushrooms so interesting to you.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. I've always been interested in the sciences, but through my schooling, I dabbled with like field work and lab work, and I just found that I like to spend my free time outside, but when it comes to a job, I really like the comfort and the diversity that like mycology in this field kind of offers.
And I mean, we've studied plants, we've studied animals, we've got those pretty down pat, but I feel like we still have a lot to learn about the world of fungi.
I would say that's totally true. And that's really part of the appeal for the field is it's rapidly evolving. There's a lot of distinct sort of separations and basically themes within the field of mycology, cultivation being one of them, foraging being another, biomedical, and really all of those fields are really in their infancy. So there's definitely a lot to learn.
So what is a mushroom?
Yeah, so many of us are familiar with what a mushroom is.
Looks like. I can tell what it, you know, when it sprouts up, I can see it, but what is it?
Yeah, so a mushroom is basically the fruiting body or the fruit of a fungal culture, oftentimes within the soil or within a wood source or wood chips, whatever it's growing off of. But there's this entire kingdom of organisms and kingdom fungi. Some of those organisms produce what we call a mushroom. And the whole purpose of that mushroom is to produce spores and go off and find a new location to grow.
So when we see these mushrooms sprout up, what does that indicate underneath?
Yeah, so fungi and species within that kingdom are pretty much ubiquitous. And so there are thousands, if not millions, of species of fungi in the soil that we garden in. And they just exist there, often, you know, harmoniously together and do their thing. Most often we like to focus on the fungi that create close relationships with the plants we grow, or perhaps like there's a whole group of organisms that are responsible for just decaying and breaking down organic matter and other plant materials. And what happens is they do their thing, often without being seen throughout the year, but then oftentimes if there's a heavy rainfall or maybe a change in temperature, that can stimulate those mushrooms to actually form. And that's the visual that we get above the soil layer.
And what kind of role do they play in their ecosystem?
Yeah, many of the mushrooms, especially those that we cultivate, are decomposers. So they're responsible for breaking down logs or leaf litter or wood chips, any sort of organic material. And that role is huge in the nutrient cycling. So that's a big part of fungi, but there are also the pathogens that cause disease in plants. And there are also the mycorrhizal fungi that form those close relationships with plants and form some sort of, you know, network down below the soil.
I must admit my ignorance, but at least I know one thing about fungi, Lindsay Bender. If you are not a mycologist, if you find a mushroom in the wild, do not eat it.
Yes, that's a very good rule of thumb. There are definitely those that you can eat, but because of the diversity, there are so many fungi out there that we either don't know enough about their edibility or toxicity, and there are certainly those that we do know enough about and you should really avoid. So it's very important that you enjoy what you're finding, discover, maybe even try to identify it or share photos, but certainly don't eat it unless you're 100% certain.
There is a Reddit forum that is entirely dedicated to identifying mushrooms, and I'm fascinated with it because the thing that always comes up is, do not eat these. You do not know how deadly they can be, and some of them can be quite deadly, and identifying the different sort of fungi that you might find in the wild really needs to be left up to an expert like a mycologist.
Yes, I would fully agree with that. It's just not worth the risk.
So with that in mind, a beautiful spring rain and bringing much needed water to my garden. And in the aftermath, when the sun comes out again, I start to find some mushrooms sprouting up in my garden. Should I be picking them out? Should I be treating them like weeds? And what do these mushrooms mean, Lindsay?
Yeah, so mushrooms form in response to ideal conditions or perhaps a stressor, but most commonly when there's a fluctuation in temperature and water. So a rainfall is a perfect example that kind of within hours can oftentimes start bringing out some of the faster growing mushrooms, like the inky caps that seemingly pop up overnight. And unless they're obviously bothering you, or perhaps you have a dog that seems to bother with the mushrooms themselves, you can leave them there and they will continue to do their own thing. Oftentimes the fruiting body of mushrooms is really ephemeral in that they're only around for a few days and they break down themselves and, you know, may go unnoticed for several months or until the next rainfall. So for the most part, I'd say just leave them, maybe enjoy them a little bit while they're there and let them be.
You said these inky caps seemingly pop up overnight, and I want to know what you mean by seemingly. They're there, right? They just haven't sprouted, or they're somewhere in the soil already.
Yeah, so most mushrooms exist either in spores within the leaf litter or in the soil, or they can colonize throughout the soil or material as mycelium, which is essentially the root-like structure of a mushroom. If you've ever pulled away a log or kicked away, you know, a thick duff of leaves in the forest floor, you may discover this white, patchy, branching looking thing. And that's oftentimes the mycelium of fungi that live there. And that's the form that we don't usually see unless we're, you know, rifling around in that organic matter. But that can kind of coalesce into a mushroom fruiting body, that mushroom that we see pretty quickly. And in the case of inky caps, they are specifically really fast to appear after a rainfall and pretty common from soil or, you know, landscaped areas with wood chip or other mulch.
Lindsay Bender, our guest, we're taking a look at the mushrooms that crop up in your garden, and your questions are welcome at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us, talk@wpr.org. And you mentioned a little bit about the relationship between plants or dying dead matter and fungi, but I'm curious about the relationship between soil and fungi, Lindsay.
Yeah, so that is a topic that we spent most of our lives at least passively observing. But for 6 years specifically, we actually ran several iterations of a study looking into that exact question, specifically working with the wine cap mushroom, which is a commonly cultivated mushroom. It's delicious, it's productive, and it grows really easily on wood chips or straw, right on the surface of the soil. So there's plenty of contact there with the soil beneath. And what we observed over years is that oftentimes there was this noticeably improved soil structure. The color was richer and darker. Oftentimes the plants in that area required less watering from the mulch, or perhaps it was from the wine cap mushroom. And so we really specifically investigated the relationship with a wine cap mushroom and several commonly grown vegetables, including tomatoes, just to see if there was a measurable improvement if you co-grew tomatoes with a wine cap mushroom together.
Well, we are talking about growing tomatoes on Garden Talk coming up this Friday here on the Larry Mueller Show from 11 to 1. The Tomato Grower's Handbook is the topic, and Holly Farrell, the author, will be Jill Nadeau's guest. So you might want to, you're going to want to tune in for that, but I might want to add some wine cap mushrooms to my garden is what it sounds like, Lindsay.
Yeah, it is by far one of the easiest cultivated mushrooms to plant and grow. You can essentially establish a bed and not do a thing after that. Maybe just keep an eye out on moisture. But, you know, in terms of cultivating mushrooms, if you select the right space, you have the right materials, planting can take just a few minutes. And there's real measurable benefits to some of these mushrooms above and beyond just growing a really exciting different crop.
Yeah, so part of those benefits would have to do with what it does to your soil, but specifically, what's it doing?
Yeah, so wine cap is a really quick, aggressive decomposer. Mm. So it seems capable of breaking down the wood chips or straw material within a single calendar year for the most part. And so the hypothesis is if it's so good at breaking down this organic material, perhaps it's able to add organic matter and improve the soil below faster than other traditional methods of improving soil microbial communities or organic matter content.
So is this remediating our soil? And what does that mean?
Yeah, so in a way, it is remediating the soil when applied, because it's able to improve quite a bit of the characteristics of the soil itself through improving the native soil microorganisms by increasing the organic matter content, reducing the need for watering because it improves its ability to hold water and moisture within the soil. So there's a lot of added benefits. And what was maybe most exciting from that research is that we saw a measurable improvement in the tomato plants in terms of disease, in terms of overall health of the plant and size of the plant. And then most excitingly, tomato plants grown with the wine cap mushroom produced more tomatoes.
Which is what folks are looking for, but also a natural disease prevention sounds like part of what you'd look for in a garden. Am I planting these wine caps right next to these tomato plants? Do they have their own section in the garden? How do I figure out where to place them or plant them?
Yeah, so wine cap mushrooms grow from wood chips or straw. Straw is a really common addition for the garden because it does break down so quickly.
Sure.
And what I would recommend doing if this is something that you wanted to adapt to your space is start by building that wine cap bed, soaking or wetting down the straw itself, putting a few inches on top of the soil, sprinkling in some wine cap spawn, that's essentially the seed to plant the mushroom, and covering with a little more straw. It's as simple as that. And then afterwards, you can plant your tomatoes or other veggies right into that material down below the soil layer.
And I'm just thinking back to last Friday's Garden Talk when we talked about straw bale gardening. And and you might not know this, Lindsay, but it sounds like if straw is such a good food for these wine cap mushrooms, you know if straw bale gardening might be a part of growing wine caps?
Yeah, so we have definitely dabbled with inoculating or planting straw bales with mushrooms, and that's especially common with the oyster mushrooms because they're fast and aggressive and very dynamic in their fruiting requirements to produce mushrooms. So we have worked with oyster mushrooms, and they fruit really well from a straw bale under certain circumstances. I can't say that we've actually paired up with a straw bale gardener to do both, though. So that would definitely be very interesting.
And this research that's being done, it's being done by the Field and Forest Products in Peshtigo?
Yeah, so we worked specifically on that project with Penn State and some people from the USDA, which were extremely helpful, and especially like data analysis and some of the special lab testing that we wanted to do. Specifically, Bob Bielman from Penn State was kind of the founder of discovering and measuring the benefits of ergothionine, which is a really specific amino acid that we can only get from our diets. And it happens to be found in highest concentrations in mushrooms.
Wow.
So, I mean, I'm biased because of the field I'm in, but definitely encourage you to eat mushrooms.
Well, and it just goes to the fact that we are still learning about this entire kingdom of species and what it has to offer us and how it can work in conjunction with not just our garden, but our entire habitat.
Absolutely, yes.
Let's go to Dot in Manitowoc next. Dot, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Now, if you have poisonous mushrooms in your garden, is that a reflection of your soil? Should you be using that soil for growing your vegetables?
Well, that's a great question. Does a poisonous mushroom make your soil poisonous, Lindsay?
It does not.
Okay.
No, the mushroom tissue itself is what's toxic to us if ingested. But oftentimes those toxic mushrooms in Wisconsin, again, are pretty ubiquitous. And, you know, when we're working in the garden, oftentimes we're adding organic materials, whether that's wood chips or other, and we're watering perhaps our plants. And so we're almost encouraging those native fungi to be more prevalent because we're supporting like that healthy ecosystem in that area. But there's not much interaction. The specific compounds that are toxic to us aren't exuded out into the soil or taken up by the plants nearby. So there's really not much of an interaction there that you should be concerned about.
If you were going to look for mushrooms in your garden, you'd probably want to look for spores from companies like Field and Forest Products and Peshtigo then. Your wine caps, your oysters.
Yeah, it's always good if you're planting mushrooms to purchase your materials from a reputable source.
Yeah.
While mycology is very easy to enter for amateurs and people just willing to experiment, at the end of the day, if what you're looking to do is make a significant improvement to your soil or successfully grow mushrooms quickly, I do encourage you to look out to somebody that's been doing it for a while.
And conducting the research, as Field and Forest Products is doing. Our guest is a mycologist from Field and Forest Products, based in Peshtigo. They're a mushroom cultivation company. Lindsay Bender joins us, and he welcomes your questions as well at 1-800-642-1234. Dot, thank you so much for yours. We have some emails to get to before we're done today, and you can still email us to talk@wpr.org. Our conversation about mushrooms in the garden continues. I'm Lee Ray. And for Larry Mueller today, and you're listening to The Larry Mueller Show. If you missed the start of the show today, I want to relay to you the fact that there are now more tickets available for Larry Mueller's appearance Wednesday, June 3rd, live at the Barrymore Theater in Madison. It starts at 7 o'clock, and we'd like to invite you for as long as tickets are available, but who knows how long they'll last this time. I think they found some standing room only or some extra spaces where we can accommodate everybody who's interested in joining Larry. That's Wednesday, June 3rd at 7 o'clock at the Barrymore Theater in Madison, and tickets are free. We just ask you that you register in advance so we know you're coming at wpr.org/presents. That's wpr.org/presents. Also, a week from Friday, Garden Talk will be live with Larry Mueller from Bayfield and Bloom from 11 to 1. And if you still want to catch Larry Mueller before he begins his retirement, you can find him throwing out the first pitch at the Duck Pond for the Madison Mallards game in Madison, and that will be Sunday, June 14th. We'll have Larry throwing out the first pitch, but also hanging out with you, having some hot dogs and beers. That is Sunday, June 14th at the Duck Pond. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Larry today, and right now we're talking with a mycologist from the Field and Forest Products in Peshtigo, Lindsay Bender, joining us, taking a look at what the mushrooms mean in your garden and elsewhere. If you've got a fungi funny story, you can also join us at 1-800-642-1234 or talk at WPR.org. Hey, Lindsay, we have an email from Carolyn who says she has stinkhorns in her front yard and has had them for the last several years. She wants to know if there's a reason they've started showing up. They're in the grass, not in a flower bed with mulch. They're pretty disgusting, but she hasn't done anything to deter them because she doesn't know what that would be. She's mowed over them once or twice over the years. They do tend to go away after a week or so. These are bright orange with a dark green slime on them. She hasn't seen any photos that look like them on the internet. Stinkhorn mushrooms, Lindsay?
Oh, yes. definitely. They are well known, as their name suggests, and also their somewhat phallic appearance in their shape. So stinkhorns tend to fruit up from more disturbed soils, very commonly right in grass or turf. So I'm not surprised to hear that she's experiencing those stinkhorns. Because they do tend to be smelly, a lot of times people will pluck them from the area and just toss them in the compost pile or, you know, the woodlot line or something just to get rid of them. But yeah, there's unfortunately not much you can do to remove that culture from the soil itself. But after a rain, when you do see those popping up, you can physically remove them from the space.
Is there a way to keep them at bay? And for that matter, Lindsay, what do they smell like?
Just not good. Rotten oftentimes. So not much to keep them at bay. You know, they are responding to the environmental cues that they naturally respond to, usually a fluctuation in that temperature and maybe a rainfall. You know, once they produce that mushroom, it releases its spores. And then from there, that mushroom will just sort of slowly break down and decompose. And that's really the smelly element of it. Mm. So if that's something undesirable, and I don't blame you, you could definitely just use your hand, pluck them out and toss them out somewhere else.
So we've talked about inky caps, wine caps, oyster mushrooms, and now the stinkhorns. Lindsay, what are some of your favorite mushrooms to grow?
Yeah, so obviously I'm really focused on the culinary mushrooms. Mm-hmm. That is, after all, what we do. So in terms of culinary mushrooms, we have shiitake, oyster, the wine cap. Lion's mane is a very popular one for its known medicinal benefits. So all of those are really fabulous to cultivate. But we have some really wonderful mushrooms that are wild here in Wisconsin that can also be foraged. Foraging is a really exciting thing, especially in the spring after we've been cooped up all winter. It's exciting to get out and kind of capitalize on what's sprouting up from those spring rainfalls. So it's a good time of the year for mushroom foraging right now.
How are lion's mane medicinal, Lindsay?
So mushrooms in general tend to have a lot of anti-inflammatory benefits.
Really?
Immune boosting potential, but lion's mane in particular has been researched for its neuroregeneration benefits. And so it seems to impact or improve the neuroplasticity in your neurons and maybe even improve memory.
What? From a mushroom?
Yes.
Oh. So you mentioned shiitake as well, and I have to admit, I have found shiitake at the grocery store to be cost prohibitive, but it makes me wonder if I were to begin growing spores of my own, whether or not that would be a way to taste shiitakes without having to pay the price at the grocery store.
Yeah, I will admit that the price at the grocery store is oftentimes higher than, say, the white button, which right. has been commercially produced for decades. And part of the white button production is in such mass that they can offer that product per pound at a very reasonably low price. When it comes to that shiitake, though, those are probably much smaller operations, you know, with higher cost per pound. But it's certainly a gourmet mushroom that either you can grow yourself or, you know, perhaps stop by a farmer's market stand.
Oh, sure. Vincent Illinois emailed us. He'd like your opinion on using mycorrhizal fungi, mycorrhizal fungi, for ecological restoration or promoting healthy orchards, and wants to know if fungi need to be locally sourced around the Midwest, or is any internet source effective?
That's a great question. First, the mycorrhizal fungi.
Thank you.
Those are really beneficial to most plants. I think, in fact, 90-some percent of plants form these really critical relationships with mycorrhizal fungi. And the role is essentially mutually beneficial for both the mushroom culture as well as the plant that forms this relationship. The plants photosynthesize and release sugars into the soil, which the fungi feeds on. And in turn, or in exchange, that mushroom culture can reach further beyond the reach of those roots and return minerals and other resources to the plant itself. So I know there's quite a bit of research specifically with utilizing mycorrhizal fungi or introducing that to the soil, because a lot of our soil practices can be damaging to native fungi. I'm not sure on specifically how to source that, because oftentimes they can be maybe regionally different. But there are certainly companies that really promote introducing more mycorrhizal fungi to the soil.
And do they need to be locally sourced?
In terms of that, I'm not as sure.
Okay.
I know with native fungi, they're fairly ubiquitous, but there may be regionally specific things, or perhaps certain species of fungi that are more beneficial to a particular plant that you're attempting to grow. So that would probably be more the question.
If I wanted to try my hand at being a fungi farmer, Lindsay, what variety would you suggest I first try?
Well, we've already touched on the wine cap, okay, which I would say is by far the easiest. But if you're willing to put in a little chainsaw work, log cultivation of mushrooms is really popular. Shiitake grow really well on oak or beech wood. Oysters love some of the softer hardwoods like box elder. And so log cultivation is really a staple in a lot of customers that we work with. I would say the other option that's quite different is growing mushrooms indoors. And that's appealing for us here in Wisconsin, where our growing season is somewhat short. You can grow mushrooms off of sawdust material indoors year-round. So that's a very popular way, especially for market sellers or commercial growers, to cultivate all sorts of varieties of mushrooms.
Hey, Lindsay, thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure to speak today, Lee.
It's fun to explore an entire kingdom that we're still learning so much about. Lindsay Bender is a mycologist for the mushroom cultivation company Field and Forest Products in Peshtigo. Tomorrow on the show, we'll be taking a look at family law, divorce, separation, marriage, and more. And we'll also dig into the latest issue of Big River Magazine with Reggie McLeod. Thanks to our team today for making it all possible, Clara Nyper, Joel Patenaud, Jeff Robbins, Jill Nadeau, and of course, Larry Mueller. I'm Lee Rayburn, in for Larry today, and you're listening to WPR News.